maybe kind of the dance or so. Maybe you've got some questions concerning the exercise. I think the background is sufficient to solve it. And basically, I don't think it's very complicated, because the thing is, it just involves lots of new terms. But in essence, if you know these terms, then the solutions are not complex. They're not many calculations. One thing that I forget to say is that this notation for functions. So it's a function which goes from a1 to a times a2 to b1 and b2, provided that f goes from a1 to b2 and g goes from a2 to b2. So let's again standard category computation. Basically, we need this product constructor from object to function. And it's not something new, it's expressible using the other syntactic construction that we introduced in the lecture. So we are working at f, gtr. So it's just this thing. And I made a footnote at the exercise just to check it, to find it here. I wonder if there's something else on here about the exercise. So otherwise, I would propose that we proceed with the previous exercise. We solved the first part of it. I think we came to. Yes, we argue at continuity, I guess, more or less. So, I'm talking about assignment one. So, I propose that we proceed further and do exercise three. So, maybe someone will be eager to do it. How about you? I can give you your submission. So which one is yours? Do you need a problem setting?
If x is of type a and we do inner on x, then we get an object of type a plus b. As PCF doesn't allow us to do any polymorphism in a nice way, I shifted the type in the index of the function. So, didn't see a nice solution for that.
Yeah, so we did it implicitly for products, so I didn't write down the indices, but this is.
Yeah, for products it's easier, because for products you have
all types. Yes, so for products you can guess the type,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And here we can't infer it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, somehow. Yeah, that's completely analogous. Yeah. function application on the coconut. So if you have two functions, F from A to C, and B to C, then you can infer that FG is from type A plus B to C. So that was the easy part.
Maybe we stick to this a bit and maybe we experiment with it. So this is all right, this is a correct solution, but do you maybe know the case operator? So there is a case operator in Haskell, it's present, I'm not sure, but there is like case, of, etc. Do you know it?
What's this in Haskell?
Yeah, that's the question, so that's why I call it an experiment. So maybe we, instead of this sort of rule, we could develop another rule, basically capturing the construction case, something of type enter, then a function of enter, another function.
Something of type inner, then.
Basically, I want this. I can write down your this already case. Let's say p of enter x q. Enter y, say r.
Okay.
So that's well, maybe I need to check. I think there is something like that in Haskell, but I'm not sure about the syntax. But that can be done too.
That's and I wonder if you, what you can express using.
This. Yeah. But can you maybe just on the fly design a typing rule for it?
And you know how exactly you should apply. So what's exactly what you wanted to do?
So my P is something returning the product type.
Co-product.
Co-product, yeah.
P is of A plus B. Q is some type. That's what I
want. No, Q is a term which depends on X.
Okay.
And it's
okay.
Supposed to, and x is of the left,
yeah.
The type
x is of type A and y
yes.
Is of type B, that's clear. So q is a function from A to?
Well, you can treat it as a term, because, so it's a term which depends on x. So like we did lambda abstraction, so when we constructed a lambda abstraction, then we have a term depending on x, and we return, make it a function. And the same thing, the same trick I showed for if, I guess, or for while. So basically, you just need to specify this q as a term in context where you add x to the context.
Okay. X is of type A.
Yeah, precisely. And Q returns some other type in C.
And same for R.
Yes.
That's really the same type. Okay, sorry.
Yes.
Then Q is type. Otherwise, it wouldn't make any sense.
Well, here that's indexed at what at the terms level.
Ah.
Well, so okay. I
no, no, that's not that index. That's supposed to be R. Is of type C.
Yeah.
And
yeah, sure. About it. Yeah, and then you can construct the.
Then I can construct that case P blah blah blah.
There's no
the argument of this term here, yeah. I guess you can write it like this. And that's what I see.
Yeah, precisely. So that's just a different way to do this. So instead of this first rule, which directly corresponds to this definition of the price, you can use this other one. And there is a slight advantage of the syntax because you can see from this type that it's first order. So you don't need to talk about functions here. Because here you talk about a function f in context and g. It's also a function in context, and if you look here, just as expressive, but it doesn't involve functions. Why it's interesting? Because now that we introduce categories, we can see that every next assumption that we have products or we have something else has like more work and more assumptions. So we introduce Cartesian categories. They are needed all the time. And then you can introduce categories with products, and then you can interpret this constructor there directly. So, but the problem with that one is that you need a notion of functions, and not every category has an internal notion of function. So in this sense, this syntax is like, in general, more advantageous for if you want to be as general as possible and assume as little as possible about your category.
Okay.
But of course, if you have function, then you can define one in terms of the other. So maybe we can do it basically.
That's more or less what we already did in exercise.
Okay.
And not exactly the same with this exercise.
So maybe you could write an equation for this case. I can help you with that. So this construction case P etc. I can tell you what it equals to in terms of this brackets.
Wait one second. This.
Already you can guess yourself.
Yeah, we need more or less, instead of Q and R, I think we need lambda x plus Q and lambda x
yes,
plus R
yes.
With Q free, with x free.
Y, and the second, place of that Y.
Right.
Yes, and you can form brackets, so that you can
right.
form this.
And then I can form brackets over these two.
Yes.
And apply them to
So yeah. Just try this completely. Repeat. Yeah.
G is equivalent to this.
Yeah. Well, actually, this. Well, this expects these two types, right?
This is not. No, that should be okay. That this expects a coproduct. This is a coproduct.
Yes.
So it's correct the times. Yeah, why not?
Well, because this product expects the context, so
yeah,
the type of this thing is like if you calculate the semantics, so it's gamma to A plus B to C, right? Because there's a context which returns an argument which returns X, so right, but internally. Yes, I think this is correct, yes. Because, yes, if you're inside the meta language, then you don't care about the context because the context is always implicit. So, yes, this is, if you denote T, then T is equal to that. So, you can just express. express this case using the brackets. All right, that was just additional fact. Let's go on.
Then we have to define semantics of the co-product in these tests. That's what I was a little bit unsure about because it didn't seem too complex to be honest. Or actually, these rules are too easy. So if you have FA which is in the Q, then G upon inner A reduces by the qualifying semantics. So that's that.
What is F? F A?
F is a function. F of light.
Okay, so if yes.
And we need, of course, if that for in R and G2. And at least in call by name, you can deduct everything you need because.
Yes.
That's so really the, simple.
And this on the right hand side is also G.
And this is Q and this is Q.
And on the left is G.
On the left is G.
Yeah, okay.
This is function.
Yeah, so this corresponds at least to the spirit of call by name because you don't have to wait A.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, and similarly for A now. So that's call by name. And call by value is a bit more complex. So, at this time, that it uses to F mark, whatever you call it. And G, it uses another form. Don't you know what it is?
But did you actually mention? Do you mean that this sort of error in on the right rule?
What kind of error?
This error to the right.
This doesn't have to be in normal form. At least that's what I expected the symbol to mean. So if I would write this one, I would enforce that FA reduces to a normal form G. But I don't care whether it's normal or not.
No, but the difference between call by name and call by value is not that one talks about normal forms and one doesn't. They both do have normal forms.
I know, but that's not important whether it's a normal form or not here. I mean, a call by name, I can infer this regardless of whether that's normal or not.
No, the difference between this sort of arrow and the horizontal arrow, the vertical arrow, is that one is a big step and one is small step.
Okay.
So for the small step, so if you want to do a small step semantic, then you need to provide one step reduction. So if you wanted to do this, then I would. Then the correct transition would be F or FG square brackets M reduced to F of A. So it wouldn't be
okay.
Q, it would be F of A with no premise.
Okay.
No. So there's no premise?
Yes, no premise.
No.
Okay.
So you don't reduce anything, you just pick out one side of the...
Yeah, right.
Because it's one step relation.
Yeah, it's clear.
So if you don't, if you say I didn't want to talk about normal forms,
yeah.
This is small step semantics, and it looks like this. And
okay.
Indeed you don't talk about normal forms because you don't know that FA is normal.
It's clear. If I do a horizontal error, then
yes.
I have to...
And, okay, so I didn't specify what sort of semantics you're supposed to give. and extend it down, called by name, called by value, operational semantics. So I can say big step or small step. So you can do it to one style or the other style. But since we're doing this already, maybe you can show the other style for the big step.
That's mostly what's already written there.
Yeah.
Or
yes.
What I had.
Yes. Just let's do it properly. Yes. It's important to get this idea right. So this small step calculates one transition, and big step calculates the relation between the current state and the end. That's hence they can name a small step and big step. Yes. Okay.
And for what I think, that's I mean, it's the same conclusion, at least to the second one.
Yeah, so first, this is not there because there's no B.
Yeah. That's not what I.
Does someone think we can do something about it?
Well, we don't need to have that f prime reduces to f reduces to f prime.
We don't need to have it, but it comes in any exercise.
I mean, we can simply say that f applied to a reduces to q.
But this will be called by name, right? Because so we are called by value, so we want to evaluate the function and the argument. Because if you have got these examples like a constant function applied to divergence, then you might have like a well-behaved semantics here. Although called by value suggests you would diverge because you evaluate the argument. Mm-hmm. But so I think this this. First part is all right, so it will evaluate the function, but what about the second one? So there's also this evaluation of g to g prime.
Yeah, you don't have it, you don't really have quality values.
So that was partly my mistake because I think I introduced the if constructor wrong at the first attempt, and then I corrected myself.
Yeah.
And my correction was precisely that I mean, the behaviors of co-products is very similar to the behavior of the if operator.
If you take this, then the co-product wouldn't have the same convergence behavior or normalized behavior as the if operator. At least that's what I got.
The semantic that I've corrected, I've corrected the semantics of if, I don't know, maybe you didn't notice it, I just, next day on the lecture, I came and said, okay. Sorry, there was a mistake, and the mistake was precisely if you have like if boolean and then left and right branch and right branch. So if they
the right branch is not normalizing and you have the boolean.
If it's true, yes, then you don't check the other branch.
Okay.
And this is exactly similar here. So you can also exactly yes.
Then
you check.
I've indeed looked at the original definition and tried to dissect
Then you check where A relates to, it relates to A prime, and then you apply the function. Yes, so I'm fine with this rule now.
Okay, and then it's the same for me now.
Yes.
And then the last part is how to, if can be expressed with the co-products.
Yes.
So what we can't do is give an exact type equivalence, I think, because the Boolean in PCF is some kind of an opaque type that we can't deconstruct and not using this co-products. But we can really find our true and false type, so we'll just say that true is whatever. So a co-product that is constructed using inner and false using.
So that's your.
So that's true.
That's how you can model the if operator.
Yeah.
If you say that instead of bool you take 1 + 1.
Yeah. Right. And. Instead of if boolean then here is true, then we can do something like under x comma q under x comma q on e whatever. So if e is of type 1 + 1 and p and q are the two terms that are in my if process. So x is free in p and in q.
Yeah, so can you write more text so that we can see the whole picture?
Okay.
Like you say if, etc.
So
what
I originally had is if p, then p, else q.
Yes.
Where p and q are terms.
Mm-hmm.
And not functions or anything else. And how I can model it, if I model the booleans as 1 + 1, then I can replace this term by lambda x point p, lambda x point q on p. Here it's also b1 and b2, b1 is of type 2 and b2 is of type 1 plus 1. And as p and q are terms, but we need functions for the co-product type here. We use just one lambda abstraction.
What is b2?
B2 is of type 1 plus 1. That's what's b1 here, but they are of different type. I didn't want to use two symbols of different type. So they have the same semantics in these terms. We need functions here. We just have terms there, so we have one lambda abstraction. And x is free in p and q. So that one reduces to.
Yeah, so maybe we can elaborate this. So maybe you elaborate this. So there's a semantics of if, maybe you could write it down.
Yeah.
Now that we remember the correct version. Let's just look at it again. I propose like you just so draw these two rules for if, and then you show the rules for that thing, and we in order to see that they have the same behavior.
I don't think the rules are interesting. The deduction itself might be more interesting.
Yeah, but still, I mean, just so that we can see both of them next to each other, so that we see that they have the same semantics.
So this one is this one is just one reduction. So
yes.
This is V1 is okay. Cool. P is subtran.
No, I didn't mean the term in context, I meant the rules of the semantic rules.
Okay.
Okay, so this means that you stick to small steps in it. Okay, the distinction is important. Let's just don't worry. So if you say that this is your term that you consider, it means that you stick to small step semantics.
Yeah.
Because in big step semantics, you would have a generic condition, and you would say in the premise, this relates to true.
I know. What I wanted to do was small step of core value.
Fine, you can do the small step, yes. So, and then, but then you don't need a premise. So that's the bottom of view.
Yeah. But that reduces to just.
Exactly, yes. So you can write it as a rule without a line, because so you could write one line, but there is nothing on top. And this is just often omitted. Yes, and for false?
For false, it's...
Yeah, could you just... sorry that I'm forced you to do all this boring...
That's okay. PLCQ. Uses doesn't matter if it's called anything or not.
Actually, yes, so it's the same for call by value and call by name as we found out it is.
Okay, and so the big step.
You need P to be a normal form then. So you
okay,
need to have P reduces to P prime and the whole thing.
Yeah, it depends. Yeah.
Yes.
Perfect.
Yes.
I'm sure how exactly that's supposed to look like the application.
By the way, are we doing call by name now or call by name?
Call by name.
Call by name, maybe okay. We could write down an index so that we see where we are. Because now it would make a difference, because, right, we've got an application, and application has a different semantics with call by name and call by value. So if we call by name, then the semantics is.
What I
you need to or invite A to for it to apply the rule you constructed.
Yeah, right. Yeah, otherwise I'm
right, yes, because you want to, right. Because you want to model the if constructor. So and if you want to model it like this, yes, so you need to well I'm not sure if because here you used your
that's exactly that.
Proper products. Yes, and here.
So, I mean, that's just if we can derive.
So here is an
appendix.
So you need a judgment for A, right? I mean, generally, if you call by name, then you need to evaluate the argument and take the result and substitute. So you don't substitute directly A, you substitute what A relates to, right?
Okay, yeah, right.
So I would say A evaluates to A prime.
A prime. And
yes. Yes.
A prime then.
Yes, and note that this this term P and X, by the way, the substitution is the other way around. So A prime is on the left and X is on the right.
I've seen both notations and I didn't know which one I used here. So.
Yes. And this term is equal to P because under the assumption P doesn't depend on X.
Yeah.
So if you substitute, so it's not a rule. It's it's just a syntactic identity.
Yeah.
So we do not do any computation here. With the if constructor, if it's a mirror. So no, we'll pull it down because we need to compare. So with the if constructor, you evaluate. You evaluate P to P prime. So maybe we should use P prime instead of C. So if you look at the top, then P is equivalent to P prime, just like you do here. So we've got this substitution, but this substitution, as I said, is vectors because p doesn't depend on x. So this side is similar. And okay, there's this relation of a to a prime, which also doesn't matter because if is of unit type. So by the way, a prime here is equal to the star.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Maybe I didn't give this rule, but any value of unit type relates to the star because the star is the only value of unit type.
Yeah, that's. If I made it star, then this notation
here. Yes. Okay.
Because if I would write that a evaluates for star, then this one, this distinction between the unit type element and.
Oh, it would be maintained because you've got a under inner. So a.
I know, but it would somehow clash with the definition.
No, I don't
think so. Klammer auf Stern und dann einen Wert, nämlich in L Stern. In R Stern.
Ah. Das hier ist hier schon, dass das bei dem Inel der Faust hat. Und das hier soll mein Star sein. Das hier ist jetzt mein Element des Unit-Types, mein 1. Und das hier ist mein Element, das weder in 1 noch in 1 drin ist. Dann nenne ich das hier halt, dann nenne ich das hier Plus, weil es ein Koprodukt und dann mache ich das Plus, natürlich das hier Plus und dann kann ich sagen, das hier ist ein Stern und das hier ist ein Stern und dann ist ein Stern das eigene Element aus 1.
And
now I have to without any clashing symbols.
Yeah, if we already have the agreement that we use the star for the element of the unit type, of course. Form the product we need to use another symbol.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say, and that's what I use one.
Yes.
Of
yeah. Right. So, okay. I'm not sure if it can be improved. I mean, that's like an open question. I say design the rule, meaning that it's not necessarily that there is like just unique way to do it. Because it's a design question. It's not a scientific question where like prove a formula where there's like you're either proven or not. It's like engineering. You design something and well, it may be a good or bad, or there are lots of things in the middle. So I didn't actually know myself if it's a standard rule. So just want to provide some way to do it. Of course, the some disadvantage here is that we do not have a rule for the coproduct itself. So we've got like a complex term in the bottom, and we're trying to calculate the normal form. But what we expect here, one would have a rule for f and g without this thing. But that's probably not possible.
Well, I see a problem with this rule because if you have something else than in left a there, for example, lambda x dot in left a applied to something. You wouldn't be able to compute it.
Right, I wouldn't be able to derive it from any cause.
This is something generic.
Yeah, because then I wouldn't have, would not have any rule for this metric, so that's completely right. Because the function application.
That's one problem, and the other problem is it clashes with the semantics of the application, because the bottom thing, it on the one hand, looks like application. And the other hand, it looks like coproduct, so which rule should be applied? There are different options. So this goes against the standard ideology of given the semantics.
But how do you?
Yeah, that's a question. I do not know. I'm wondering. So one way to do it. No, actually. I think the right way to do it is to modify your notion of value in the first place. because, well, you can sit down if you want. So, we complicated our type system, so we now have an additional type A plus B. And in order to avoid these sort of issues, I think the right solution is to introduce a new sort of values, which are the product values. Because now you see that it's if you don't have a special notion of value, you cannot solve this problem, because you cannot say, you cannot be modular. You cannot say, this thing relates to something, that thing relates to something, and then I get a rule for this kind of construction derived. So what I would prefer to have something like this, F and G, it relates to something, but what is that something? That something would be a coproduct. So I need to tell my values are the things that I had before plus coproducts. So it, and that again depends on where I am in call by value or in call by name. So let's say I'm call by name, which is always simpler, but maybe not for the coproducts. So a value is like say 1 of type 1, M of type not, D of type full, and A lambda XT. One figure, or well, like a product. So ST is closed. Let's call it T S. So that's my proposal. If we do it like this, then we can say that this is a normal form. I mean, at least we can express it. So I'm just speculating. I'm not sure if it's the right solution, but let's try to do it and see if we can solve this problem. And then I can say so that's probably not so good. So I can do it possibly like this. F of x, g of x. How about this? Because I want to attack this case. So if I now wanted to calculate the semantics of this thing. Mm-hmm. this is my so how would they proceed here? So by name. Okay, this is an application. I want to treat it as a normal application because I already have a rule for it. So I need to evaluate this thing. So, and this new rule will tell me that it evaluates to x, fx, gx. And ml t evaluates to ml t. Okay, so I also need a rule like this. This x here is my ML f of. I'm replacing it with what? So something is wrong here. So this this is not correct, right? Because this this f expects for a value of the type on the left hand side of the equal product, and this expects for the value of the right hand side of the equal product. Yeah. So that's that was some idea, but it doesn't work so far. So what we can do about it?
Yes. I think we need to evaluate the argument of ft, because depending on the argument, we need to apply either f or t. But then we can call for a more general argument than left or right. So we can say that a evaluates to.
I don't know about this rule. Because we need a rule for this sort of. For this sort of construction,
We could say that fg is a normal form already, so that
this you say this is a normal form.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but the problem is, if this is a normal form and this is a normal form, then there is no rule which would tell that this collapses. I want to say that this is equal to something. I mean, I do not know what it is because I do not know the premises. But obviously, I need to capture the semantics here somehow. I need to make sure that this this interval interacts with coproducts, and this T, this F is applied to T. So which rule would express it? Because this one cannot express it so far because this is incorrect. It doesn't type. So I need something on the right hand side. And okay, that was my proposal. Perhaps I need to verify it. I mean, this looks something in the right direction because this is a function. So I take a pair of functions, and the result should be a function. And this function must be in normal form. And normal forms are lambda abstractions. So I need to have lambda x something. And the problem here is this something I cannot write down yet, because I need to have some construction which would say lambda x, and if x was inner, then I run f. If x was inner, then I run g. So it's just not available in the grammar of the type. So this leads me to the idea that I need to complicate my notion of value even more. So basically, what I need is this construction which I proposed before, case of inner z. Well, let's say what f of z y h of z. Let's try this. So if I have this, which is closed again, so I need to make sure that there are no variables. And if I postulate this as a value, then I can say that this is equal to lambda x case x of n y. F of y n or z g of z. Right? So now I can express it. If I say that my value can be as difficult as this, as complex as this, then I can calculate a normal form. By definition, it's a normal form. And let's see if we can tackle it. Okay, so and then I need more rules. I need to say that case in all x of y goes to f of y and z goes to g of y. So provided that f of x evaluates to c. And the same thing for g of x evaluates to c, then case of I need to redesign my approach quite a lot. So I need to introduce a new kind of values and new kind of terms, and it's not only sufficient to introduce this rule, because then this is my new sort of terms, and I also need to explain how they interact with my inner and inner. So these rules are like the corresponding to these rules. So, and now when I have all these rules, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I can get back to my example. So this evaluates to number x case x of n of y to f of y number z g of z. Okay, and now this was the rule for the application, so I substitute this instead of x here, so I get case NOT of, so actually this can be a generic term here, T. Also here, T, T, case null of N of Y to F of Y, and so on. This part doesn't matter because it will die. And then we can use this rule here. So we need to calculate F of T. So let's say it's related to C, so this relates to C, and this relates to C. Right? I mean, that's non-trivial, because this, I admit, I just want to propose you a challenge, how you do how you do the semantics, how you design it. So, because, well, right, so you want to have a certain effect. Okay, you try to use the approach that that was presented, you run into troubles because it doesn't work. So here, the first trouble was that, okay, this is an implication, and you must ideally apply the rule for application which you already have. But then the problem is what it relates to, because we need to relate it to some number term, because this is what my application rule requires, but I cannot come up with a candidate for it. And in order to come up with a candidate for it, you need to modify the notion of values. So you introduce this case rule here, and you say this is what it relates to. But then, okay, you can make a new step. So you are stuck here to here. So you can form this term just because of the evaluation rule. But now you're stuck here because this is a term for which you do not have a rule. So you provide a rule for it, and then you have done. So it's like a development, it's engineering process. So you give the general spirit of the semantics that it's compositional, and then you need to reduce the rules that you already have. So, and if you get it, then there is like several iterations that you do. It's like proof by induction, when you do not kind of prove something immediately, but you need to strengthen your claim, you need to generalize it. So here it's the same thing, because all this rules, it's like induction clauses, and if you cannot immediately get the result, then you need to generalize these rules and do something stronger to get the effect that you meant originally. So if I related this, I would accept the solutions like the one which was presented if there were no troubles which directly reflect misunderstanding of the material from the lecture. Of course, this is very open. I don't expect you to make such a big route. And I want to stimulate the discussion on this. Right, so, I mean, is it more or less clear, this, what about you? So.
Yeah.
Hopefully this was useful. The problem, yes, if I just present it, then it's difficult to get where's the trouble is, where you get stuck. If you do it yourself, then you see where you get stuck.
I see what's the problem, and it's incredibly tacky.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Right, so then there is this last exercise. Maybe someone can show a nice program and comment on it.
I guess I can show mine.
Can you connect it to the... Alright, so let's try this thing. If you can put on the jersey.
That's magic.
You
can.
I
don't know.
Okay, never mind. Okay, so for the Pythagorean triples, I first define a function pt, which given c, which will be the hypotenuse of the triples, just constructs a list of all the triples with that hypotenuse. Yeah, and the way you do it is by list comprehension. So you take all A from 1 up to C, then you take all B from A up to C, so that you don't get every Pythagorean triple twice. Well, and then you just filter out those for which the identity doesn't hold. So I guess I can say pt of 5, which is then just 3, 4, 5. I could do pt of 100, and I get two solutions. Okay, so that's the pt function, and this one is...
How do you make sure that they don't repeat?
That they don't repeat?
Yes, because
so
A, B can be...
I assert that, that B is greater or equal to A.
But where is it?
Here. I only take B from beginning from A. Right, and
yes, where
and
size
and there is no Pythagorean triple such that
precisely.
A and B are the same. Which isn't that hard to see. Okay. So with that out of the way, the first exercise, just constructing a list of all the Pythagorean triples, can be done like this. We take the PT function and map it to the list of all integers. So what this yields is a list of lists of Pythagorean triples, and then you can use the built-in function concat, which just puts all these lists together into one list. So I guess I could first show what map pt to that list does. So this gives us a list of lists, right? And then I can say, well, take 100 all pt, and then I get the first 100 triples, and concat just puts them into one single list.
What type does this list have?
Let's see. Oh. Okay. So it's so it goes to straight to arbitrary precision integers. Okay, so that's the first part of the exercise. Let's look at the second one. For the second one, you yet again map pt to the list of all integers. Then, what does the next part do? Well, drop while does just what it's what the name says. So it drops elements. So it drops all elements for which this predicate holds. And this predicate is true if and only if it is presented with a list with less than two elements. So this dot is function composition. So I first calculate the length and then compare it to two. And this drop while, so after this stage, the part with all elements with the list less than less length less than two gets dropped. Yeah.
Why is it two and not three?
I think the assignment called for the first pair of Pythagorean triples with the same hypotenuse.
Okay.
So. That's right. So I don't care for hypotenuses which have only zero or one Pythagorean triples. Okay, then the next part is simple. Head just takes the first element of that list. And the last part here is just in formatting, taking. So now I've got a list of Pythagorean triples, and I want to make it into a pair of Pythagorean triples. So this gives me just that pair. Okay, we can try it out. What was it? First pair? Yes. So the first pair is for hypotenuse 25.
Did you know it before?
I mean, I guess I could have worked it out, but...
Yes, but I think you do this. The Pythagorean theorem was in school, don't you? I mean, that's explained in basic school in Germany, I don't know. So there are just some very simple examples given, like 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, that
one appears
from time to time. I'm not sure about the 7, 24, 25 one. I mean, the 15, 20, 25 is just a multiple of 3, 4, 5. Not sure, but I don't think it was really on the curriculum. Maybe it just popped up.
It just depends how many examples you have. So maybe the examples was like, I mean, it's not too far from the beginning of this trip.
I mean, the people that propose exercises for school courses are trying to make exercises which have whole numbers as end results. So I guess sometimes
it could just have been like said as a curious fact that you can construct several ones with the same. Okay, any questions for that? Good.